Hey everybody, welcome to the Creative Processing Podcast. My name is Joe Gordon-Levitt. The idea of this show is to have a conversation about the creative process inspired by one question. That question comes from you out there asking questions on the internet. And then I find a guest who I think will be good at answering that question. This week's guest is the casting director, Mary Verneuil. She is an incredible, smart, and very, very accomplished casting director in the movie business. She cast some of her recent credits are the show that's just out now, Euphoria, Fast and the Furious, Hobbs and Shaw, John Wick, A Star is Born. She works with some of the best directors, or at least my favorite directors, Darren Aronofsky, Robert Rodriguez, Rian Johnson, our friend Rian Johnson. She cast the Star Wars movie that Rian did. She cast his latest movie, Knives Out. She cast me in his movie, Looper. And she also cast the movie that I wrote and directed, Don John, which is how I know her. Well, I guess I knew her from before. But anyway, she's an incredibly talented, smart person, super good at her job. And I thought she'd be really good at answering this question. This question is from Monica Patricio from Lima, Peru. And Monica asked, how much do contacts matter when starting a project or career? This is the whole question of, it's all about who you know. And on the one hand, I cringe when I hear that, to be really honest. Like, it's not just about who you know. You got to be good at what you do. You got to work hard. But if I'm really honest, of course, it also does have to do with who you know. And this is what Mary and I were talking about. You know, she's on the front lines of this. She's a casting director. She's sort of that, I don't know, you could almost say gatekeeper, if you will, if you wanted to phrase it a certain way. I don't think she thinks of herself that way, but I imagine that is kind of how it looks to the rest of the world, especially people who want to have a career in a creative field like acting. But I think this applies to any creative field, not just acting. It could be music, could be writing, could be anything. There's a perception, and I think the perception is to some degree true, that there's like a gatekeeper. There's a person who's holding the keys. And if they'll give you a shot, if they'll let you into the party, then you can do your thing professionally. And I'm describing it in mythical terms, and I think it's partially a myth, but again, I think it's partially true, for better or for worse. And we talk about some of that struggle of that it's not always fair. I hate to be the one saying it. I wish that it were. It should be in an ideal world, but it's not. And how to, A, deal with that, how to overcome it, and also just how to cope with that reality. I also think that this episode, probably more than other ones, has some good kind of practical takeaways for those of you out there that might be thinking about having a career in a creative field, or already do have a career in a creative field. And I frankly mostly sort of de-emphasize the career part, not because it's not important, but because there's already just so much talk about that. But if you are interested in pursuing a creative field professionally, or if you already are doing that, whether it's acting or, like I said, in the other professional fields, I think this episode will be useful. I think it will be inspiring. I think it'll galvanize you to go do it. But I also really wanted it to be realistic, because I think there's a lot of rhetoric out there of, I can help you follow your dreams. And I think some of that stuff, frankly, is not entirely honest. And I think Mary and I were doing our best to have an honest conversation. So with that ominous preface, it was a lovely conversation. She's a lovely person. I hope you enjoy it. So, ladies and gentlemen, Mary Verneuil. Mary, thanks for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You don't usually get to do podcasts and stuff, and like interviews and things.
No, yeah. I don't. Yeah. I'm always behind the scenes.
Right, right. So you're a fantastic casting director. I've worked with you a number of times,
yes.
And you've worked with a great many incredible filmmakers that I will have already detailed to our listening audience. But do you want to just... this show is about us discussing one question, and I want to read the question, and then I think though before maybe starting to answer it, it might be worth just talking a bit about what a casting director is and does. Do you want to just talk about that for a sec, and then I'll read the question?
Sure. A casting director is someone who helps the director figure out who should be in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to know talent and to discover talent and to find people in the, most unusual places. We get a script and we make lists and, check people, what they're doing, what their schedules are, and then sort of review those lists with the director and the producers. And then also start the audition process and, get people in to read and pull the sides and sort of like put the faces of the movie together.
When you say pull the sides and the audition process, for those listening that don't know anything about that, can you elaborate on what that
is? Yes. So you pick the scenes that you think are best to have the actor be able to have the director get a sense of what the actor can do with the role.
Mm-hmm.
So you pull some scenes from the script and you bring them in and have them read and hopefully do, a work process with the director.
Yeah.
So that everyone can get a sense. And that process is very helpful for the director because then they can get to know their characters.
Right. This is the audition. I've done this many, many times, been doing it ever since I was a little kid. I started auditioning. And it's a big part of if you want to work professionally as an actor, auditioning is a big, big part of it.
It is a big part. And it's not always – it can be a very hard process, I think, for the actor.
Very.
It's a very hard process for the actor. And, I really try to make it a warm place and a safe place.
That's a big part of why you're so good at it, I think, you make it not as painful. Because some auditions are
– painful.
Painful. So some of the more – embarrassing and just like nerve-wracking experiences in my life have been auditions.
Yeah, they're hard. Yeah. It's a really hard thing because it's an artificial environment.
Yeah.
So as an artist, you're walking into this funny room with people who are, you don't know if they're friendly or not, and it can be, it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah. So you as the casting director are sort of in charge of making this process go.
And yes.
Who the people are that will come and audition and how that audition is going to work. And you do it very well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do try to make it a nice environment because I do know how hard it is. It's rough on the actors, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to ask the question and then we'll see, all the different things that leads us to talk to.
Okay.
So this question, it comes from Monica Patricio from Lima, Peru.
Oh, wow.
And she asked, how much do contacts matter when starting a project or career?
I think I try not to make that matter much. I think it's helpful to get in the room because it's all about how you get in the room to audition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a good agent or a good manager that is, knowledgeable and has relationships with the casting director, that definitely can be helpful.
Yeah.
But I really like to find people who might not have those contacts. And so, it's for me, it's not as important. I think it's important for my job, sometimes I'll see someone on the street and just be like, my office gets very mad at me because I go outside the box a lot.
You'll see someone, you've done that, you've seen someone on the street and just based on what they look like?
Yeah, and if I'm looking for that and it's like an instinct.
When was
the
last time that actually happened?
I'm trying to remember when I do it a lot with if it's a kid of kids, if I'm looking for like a younger version of someone and then I'll see someone and then, we'll go up and try to get them to kind of audition because especially with kids, it's not necessarily, they don't need to be actors as much. It's more if they're close to who they're playing.
Right.
And I do it a lot on, if there's some some commercial, I'll see somebody in the background. I'm like, find that person. Because for me, it's just all about how they feel, how it feels. Like if you're like, oh, they catch your eye, it means something.
That is something that I have noticed so much in because I grew up going on all these auditions and wondering, are they going to pick me? Am I going to get the part? And what's it going to take for me to convince these people in this room to give me this part? And my natural tendency is like, well, if I do the best job, if I'm just the best actor that they see, if I've like really invented a great version of this character, and I know these lines inside and out, and I make this scene really cook, like if I'm just skilled with my acting, that's going to make the difference. And I'm not saying that it doesn't make a difference, but what's so illuminating for me, having now been on the other side of those audition rooms, like, you were the casting director when I directed a movie. I directed Don John, and you were the casting director. And watching actors come in and getting a sense of why, like, I'm now that one. I'm on the other side, like, making this decision. Okay, is it this person or is it that person? And certainly the skill is important, but there is something about what you just said, like, just how the person feels. That it's hard to put your finger on.
It's an essence. It's for what is a good match with whatever the role is. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the role. It's also who else is in the movie and how that all fits together. Mm-hmm. It's quite a puzzle. And I always say to people, you know, go in and do the best that you can do and leave it in the room. Because there are so many factors that contribute to if you get a part or not. And it's very hard not to internalize or personalize that, but it really isn't. You should definitely come in and do the best job you can do, and if it's meant to be, it'll be.
That's I think was honestly impossible for me to understand until I was on the other side of it. And once I was on the other side of it, I was like, oh wow, because I watched and saw actors come in with so much skill that had put in so much work, and were just clearly not going to get the part.
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't the right, like you said, all those different variables, it just didn't quite have that right feeling for that role, combining with the other actors and the material or whatever else. And I thought to myself back on all these times where I had put so much work into preparing and like giving a good skilled audition and didn't get the part. I was like, why didn't I get that? And I then realized like, oh, I mean, not to toot my own horn and say that I was like so good or skilled or whatever, but I just realized like even if I were so good and skilled, that might not be the only determining factor. I might just not have felt right.
Yeah, it's an interesting, and it really is something for me after doing this as long as I've been doing it. I get a very strong feeling when you know there's just something. Uh-huh. It's interesting. You just sort of, you're like, oh, I think that's the person,
right?
You know, and often that will happen with the first person who auditions, I find, which is a very interesting. A lot of times the first person comes in and they set a bar, and then you go through this whole process, and a lot of times you end up where you started, which I also find very, you know, interesting.
Well, that indicates some kind of bias, doesn't it? Like, there's an advantage. I didn't know that. I'm going to, like, now try to schedule my auditions early in the morning.
Be the very first person on the very first day.
Yeah. Well, so you were saying then, so to the question of how much contacts matter, because I think a lot of people listening to this right now, whether they want to be an actor or they want to do something else creative, whether it's in music or it's in, who knows, graphic design or writing or anything else, there's a perceived gatekeeper somewhere.
Right.
That's like, I want a career and I have to convince this person to give me the shot. And I think that's real. I mean, that is kind of your job. And it is your job to this question of like, how much do contacts matter? It's your job to try to make it matter less because you're out there trying to find the people who don't necessarily have the agent, who don't necessarily have the manager, who haven't necessarily been able to move to LA and like do that.
And do that, yeah.
But, I mean, You're not going to discover someone on the streets in, you know, like this question came from Lima, Peru. When was the last time you were in Lima?
Never.
Right. So how, I mean, to some degree, then the contacts matter.
Yeah. I think it's contacts for sure. Somebody who can give you the knowledge about the things, though. It's more about having the knowledge about the project and figuring out how to get your way in.
Right.
Like, I'm a big believer in really working really hard and at your dream, whatever your dream is, and working really hard. And I think there's a certain manifestation that happens in that process, too. And that, like, yes, it's important to know some person who knows somebody. Mm-hmm. But I think in the journey of your work, you'll find that person. Because I think it's all about the art. It's about your art. And so the contacts matter. But to me, that's the one of the least important things.
Because even if you have the contacts might get you in the room, but getting in the room isn't necessarily going to get you
the job. It's not necessarily going to get you the job.
Right.
And I think that, like, our business works on, it does have, like, if you know someone and you know that person. But I think the whole dream of becoming an actor and becoming a thing, that that dream is also the, hey, you know, you look great for this part. So it's, and I think especially nowadays with the internet and being able to do, like, we're able to do sort of open calls on the internet.
Interesting. Talk more about that, because I'm sure a lot of people listening, they can't move to LA.
No.
They like can't afford it, or they can't, you know, they're in the middle of something, whatever. They're in the middle of their lives, whether it's family, professional, whatever else. They're not going to be able to just pick up and move to Hollywood.
Right.
But they might really want to work in the movie business or other things. So the internet has the potential to really open that up.
Yes.
How has the internet changed, like, what
well,
you do?
Well, it's changed it quite a bit. I mean, you know, when I first started, we would have to go do open calls, and we would physically have to go to whatever city it was. You know, when I was an assistant, you know, on The Doors, we did a huge open call here for all the concert goers, and it was so fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun. Really fun, interesting. And then, like, on JFK, we went to Texas and found all of the people that should people the sort of street scenes, and we found people that way. You know, you go and we would go to a, you know, a stadium, and publicize it and have people come, and you would, you know, read everybody. You know, we did that. We've done that on quite a few movies. And nowadays we don't go to the actual place because we can put things out, you know, via the internet, and people can self-tape and they can upload it to, you know, to our site. And
how does that work? You have a website, and how do you put out those calls?
Well, there's a thing called Breakdown Services, which has – it goes to all the agents, but it also has its section that's all access. So if you're someone who's, like, looking to see what's going on, you can go on that. It's a very minimal fee.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you what, okay, this person's casting this for a TV show or for a movie. And there's a place where you can just audition. The sides are up there.
The sides are up there, and you can tape an audition.
Sides are up there, yeah. And you can audition, and you can load your thing. You can load your audition up on that site.
Yeah.
And then we'll see it.
Yeah. This might sound depressing, but I feel like it'd be dishonest of me not to say this. I've done a bunch of audition tapes where I send in tapes of myself. I've never gotten a part that way. I'm not saying that parts aren't gotten that way. I just personally have never gotten one that way.
I think that it's now becomes, like, some people's, there'll be some casting directors, it's like they need to do it quickly.
Yeah.
So they won't even read people. They'll just send out self-tapes. Recently,
yeah,
things are more about self-tapes than anything else. And a lot of people sometimes don't even have offices. And do everything via self-tapes.
It's been a while since I was doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it's really changed. Like, now it's, you know, if we're in a rush and we have to get something done in 2 days, we just send out all the self-tapes, and literally that's how we cast it.
Right, right.
And I think also people are more open to that. Like, the directors are a little more open to it too, about looking at people on tape, because it's a further reach.
Yeah. So you mentioned agents and managers, which, to this question of contact, that's a big contact. Everyone talks about, like, wanting to get an agent or get represented in that way. And again, this is more than just acting. This is for writing or music or
anything.
Anything. What's your perspective on that whole thing, on agents, on, like, how it works, on who gets agents, on how does that go?
Well, a good agent is very important. Having a good agent is very important because for me, if an agent that I trust calls me and said, you have to meet this person, yeah. I meet the person.
Right.
Hands down. And I probably do a general with people I don't know.
What's that mean?
It means like, so someone calls and says, you have to meet this person.
Yeah.
And they come in and I sit with them for, you know, 30 minutes.
Even if there's not a particular part that you're...
just have a one-on-one, just sit down and say hi to them and get to know them. Mm-hmm. I probably do one of those a day. You know, I try to have, I have a one slot that I try to do.
Yeah.
And if I'm extra busy, sometimes I don't make it, but I really do try to do that because it's how you know who's new and who's coming, you know, up.
Right. And so those generals are usually recommendations from an agent.
Yes. It's usually, you know, it's either a recommendation from an agent or manager or it's a favor.
Right. And so you're out there looking for folks who are new, but agents are also out there looking for folks who are new. That's like that's what they do.
Yes, that's what they do.
How good at it do you think they are? Like, if you're in Lima again, is an agent going to find you?
I think that's hard. I think you have to find a way to have them find you, which is maybe, you know, doing some sort of audition for something mm-hmm. that somebody recognizes you for. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know managers that, you know, do go to a lot of theater because theater is a really good way. Sometimes you'll mm-hmm. go to a play, which I try to do as often as I can in both New York and L.A.
Yeah.
And you'll see someone and you've never seen them before. And right. that's exciting to me. That's right. Like, oh, it's like, who is that person? Oh, my gosh, they were so good in the play.
Yeah.
And I think that part of that is also that what I was talking about before about the manifestation of being an artist and just doing your work.
Yeah.
I feel like it'll come to you if you work really, really hard and try to do everything that you can.
Right.
Whether it's self-tapes and, you know, figuring out breakdown or doing a play, you know, or doing a showcase.
Yeah. What about, speaking of the internet, we talked about, what'd you call it, breakdown services.
Yes.
But then, there, of course, there's YouTube. There's social media at large.
Yes.
How much is that a thing? Because that feels like, oh, but maybe that's a viable avenue that wasn't available when I was getting started acting, that you could maybe prove yourself as an artist online. How much are you or the agents that you work with aware of or sort of on the lookout for stuff online in that capacity?
Definitely a place to look for talent. And I think that a lot of the agencies now have departments that specialize just in YouTube and, you know, sort of finding the people on the internet, whether, you know, is that how Justin Bieber was discovered?
Right,
I think,
right.
And so I think that that has become a definite pool of finding talent.
Yeah.
Andrew Batchelor, who I love, came off of doing a YouTube show, and he's now really working a lot and has really honed in on his craft and is doing a lot of movies, and he's very funny. And so I think it's doing the YouTube and then trying to figure out what the transition is.
Right.
Because it's probably taking some acting classes and really – I also think watching a lot of movies is very helpful.
Mm-hmm. I love that you keep coming back to the art itself. Because people ask me this. People have always asked me this ever since I was young, because I was on TV and stuff. People would ask me, how can I do what you do? And it's a perfectly reasonable question,
absolutely,
of course. Like, why? Like, people would want to know. But I always did find it remarkable that the conversation would rarely be about the art. Like, how do you do what you do meant, how do I get an agent? How do I get the contacts? How do I get the job? How do I get, like, how can I, like, work my way into getting into that room? And rarely would be about how do you do what you do, meaning how does story work? How does character work? How, you know, how could I invent a character and turn myself into that person? And how does comedy work? And how does drama work? And, like, people ask me that less frequently.
Yeah.
Do you find the same?
Yes, I do. And I think, and I do think it is about the art. And I do think it's about coming from inside of your passion as an artist is where it gets you where you want to be. And I find, you know, I meet a lot of people who want to be famous, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what it's about. I think it's about doing the work and being an artist. And there's a lot of people who come who want to be famous, and they come to LA and they want to do, and then you see it doesn't last. That's something that doesn't, it's not sustainable, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think if it comes to you, it's an amazing thing, but it's all about the work that gets you there.
Yeah. Well, fame, I think, by definition, is fickle because fame is all, like, it's always sort of about the new shiny object. And so if fame is the goal, you're definitively, even if you achieve it sometime soon, you're going to lose it just by definition.
Like, absolutely.
Because that's how fame works. Whereas creativity or art, it's not about that kind of fickle popularity contest. If you're a great storyteller, or you're a great painter, or you're a great whatever it is, like, those mediums are by definition immortal. That's
exactly
the whole idea
that's
of what
the whole
a painting
idea.
Is.
That's what where the immortality comes is creativity.
Yeah.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, another adjacent thing that connects to contacts is just, I guess, experience. How do you think about casting someone who's new versus someone who's done it a lot?
Well, new is always exciting because it's, you know, one of my favorite things about what I do is when somebody who's brand new comes in and they get that job, it's like you watch someone's dream come true. It's the most exciting thing,
right,
to see that happen to someone. You know, it really is. It's really a beautiful thing. And I think that someone who's been doing it a long time, that experience and that knowledge is something that is crucial to being able to play a role. So normally when someone's new, it's like because they're like they're perfect for it. For whatever reason, it's like it's either close to who they are or they're they're just a great actor and they're new to, you know, to doing it or you know, but I think they're both very valuable. I think they're both they're very different things, but I look for both.
You do, right?
Yeah.
Cuz obviously someone who's new is probably going to have fewer contacts.
Right.
You're not going to be able to call up the last director who worked with them and say, hey, was this a good experience with this person?
Right.
So is that a bit of a disadvantage then sometimes? Does that give the experienced people an advantage?
It gives, I mean, I think the experience.
I want the advantage, man.
I think you have the advantage. Definitely the experienced people have the advantage in that way. I think the experienced people have the advantage in that way because you do have the history of what they've been doing.
Yeah.
And you certainly can't have a movie with all new people.
Yeah. That's
right?
Interesting.
It's balance.
Talk about that. Why? Because
right?
I think I know where you're going there, but unpack that. You can't have a movie with all new people. Why?
Because then you have no one who has any experience, and then so there's nothing to ground the movie in experience. You know, it's when you do a movie with kids, for example, most of them will be on the newer side, usually.
By definition.
Right, by definition, because they're kids.
Yeah.
But you'll always have an adult in the movie that that is sort of balances it out.
Yeah.
So that they can, and then the kids can learn from the adults and have an experience of people who you can surround them with people who know it, who actually have experience.
Right. I see, when you said you can't usually have a movie if everyone's new, where my perhaps cynical mind went is it's really, it's hard to get a movie made, meaning it's hard to gather the financing for a movie. And the people who put up money, one of the things that gives them confidence to make the investment in the movie is, oh, well, a certain number of the actors have done a certain number of movies that have been successful and are, you know, known and all that. So that's, I mean, that's an indirect sort of contact, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. How much, and I kind of know the answer because we've cast a movie together before, mm-hmm. like... But I'm curious just to talk about how much that plays a part in a casting process, thinking about, well, we want to have a balance of well-known actors versus less well-known actors.
I think that you have to have someone who is known to the audience for any movie that is a substantial amount of money. You know, you can make a little movie that has nobody in it.
Yeah.
And sometimes those movies will perform and be successful because it's art, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in general, yeah. you know, if you're doing especially independent film, they all, you know, everyone wants somebody who is bankable.
A name is a what name. You were going to say. Someone
exactly.
who's bankable.
A name yeah. who is bankable.
Oh, it's sort of sad to
it's
think
very
about.
Very sad.
Yeah.
But I will say that with these newer platforms, whether it's Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, there's been a more of an opportunity for people to do things mm-hmm. to you know, they're a little more flexibility mm-hmm. than in say like they want a name in every part.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at a show like Fleabag, for example, no one, you know,
love Fleabag.
Oh my gosh, I love
you just brought that up.
I love it, you know.
Yeah.
Obsessed, right?
Like no, it's like as good as any movie or any art that Fleabag and Atlanta to me are like my just favorite things right now.
Agree.
Of anything.
Like, of anything.
Yeah.
Like, I was so sad after the second season of Fleabag.
I
didn't know what I was going to do. I just watched it again.
Did you? I guess I had to go back for round two.
Yes. Because it's, and it's a, you know, one of the few things I find was like the second season was better than the first or as mm-hmm. good or however you want to say it. But I was just like,
yeah,
just really, it's, she's amazing.
Yeah, she really is.
She's amazing.
As an actor and as a writer. She's writing it and acting it.
Yeah. And she wrote Killing Eve. And
right.
Now she's writing Bond.
I heard.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually go see a James Bond movie.
I know.
I haven't gone
too.
To see a James Bond movie in many years.
Yes, because you know she'll do something interesting. And,
yeah.
you know, she's a perfect example of somebody who, you know, I talked to my friend who's a casting director in London, and she said, you know, she's been doing this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that show's based on her one-woman show.
Right. Right.
That she started as like a tiny production in London that then went to West End. You know, it just grew and grew.
To your
and
point,
grew.
Do the art. And
the contacts will come.
Right.
Like, that's a great success story.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And she wrote it for herself. That's interesting. That's something that I think I in my life kind of discovered that I needed. It wasn't – I couldn't just – stake my whole creative life on being cast as an actor in movies. It was just too dependent on other people, and I needed to have more of my own. Like I need to have the ability to take control of my own creative outlet.
Yeah, it's frustrating to have to depend on other people. And
yeah.
And again, the reasons are not have anything to do with anything. They're just other, you know, it's a difficult process. So it's great that you can write your own.
I would imagine that if there are anybody out there listening who's interested in pursuing acting, and I think they would be interested to hear from you, that would be one of my first pieces of advice would be don't just act. I mean, which isn't to take anything away from acting, but like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, is that her name?
Yes.
Being such a shining example of taking matters into your own hands and writing. Write the role that you want.
That you want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do, you know, and not everything has to be a gazillion dollar budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can do things for lower budget, which is kind of what she, you know, when she started, she did that as a one-woman show and then it went into a TV show. You know, you can sort of, I think it's that thing of giving it a place to grow.
Right. I want to ask about diversity in casting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great thing that it's more and more top of mind for people in Hollywood and all over the country and hopefully more and more of the world, that there's been a severe lopsidedness in who's represented in the media. And casting is a big part of that. Can you talk about how you've seen things evolve in terms of a wider variety of people being cast? And which isn't to say that we've arrived at the promised land right now. Like, we still have a long way to go. But it does seem like we're moving in the right direction.
100%. I mean, I think people are really conscious of diversity on every level. The studios, the producers, the directors, of making sure that what they're showing to the world reflects the world. And it's been a great thing because it's a lot of opportunity for people who might not have had that opportunity before.
Yeah. And so how does that work its way into how you actually do your job on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it's making sure that we're well-versed in the diverse actors. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting, too. You know, I went to see this play in San Francisco that was all about the Syrian refugee crisis. Mm. And it had actors from all over the world that were, you know, every ethnicity. And it was such a great, like, I don't know that any of them would have had that opportunity before. You know, I think that play might not have been produced, say, you know, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, was like, oh, I want to know who this person is, that person. You know, the scope is much wider. And it's not just Latin or African American, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's like the world. And then that's a really exciting thing to be able to meet actors from all over.
Now, when a role is written, sometimes a script will specify the ethnicity of the character, but oftentimes not.
Yes.
So is that a conversation you have with a director when you're going through a script? Like, do you specifically ask, hey, is there an ethnicity you have in mind for this part, that part, the other part?
Yes. When you're sort of breaking down the script and you're going to put the character description on breakdown, that's where you'll usually ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes if you have been searching and the right person hasn't come along,
mm-hmm.
you'll often try to open it up that way.
Do you mean searching and the right person? Like, if it was assumed it was going to be one ethnicity and the right person hasn't come along, you say, well, let's maybe not limit it to this ethnicity?
That's not limited, yeah. And what about this person? Because that person, it may not be the ethnicity you were thinking, but they have the essence of the character.
Yeah. I'm writing something right now, and I actually, we have both. We don't have complete scripts yet, but some of the characters, it's specified what their ethnicity is.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the characters where it is specified, it's because there's like a reason for that, or there's a particular actor that I already have in mind or whatever. But some of the characters were not specifying the ethnicity, and I am intentionally just kind of saying to myself, I don't know what ethnicity this character is going to end up as. I want to get into a casting process and meet a lot of different actors, and I want it to be more about, like you said, finding the exact right actor than finding someone of this or that
right.
ethnicity.
Yeah, which I think it's very good to be open.
Yeah.
You know, I've been finding a little bit of people, there's been a little bit of a tendency to say, well, we need to have this ethnicity, like
mm-hmm.
a representation of every ethnicity, and which that sometimes I think is the wrong direction.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Like tokenism, are you talking about?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but I think that's just the opposite. It sort of is the inverse of no diversity, right?
Right.
If you're doing it just to be diverse.
Right.
I think the studios and the networks are very, very aware of diversity right now.
Right.
It is to the point of, where it might not make sense, and you're still sort of given marching orders that you need to this certain character needs to be diverse.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm in less contact with it than you are, but I've definitely sensed some of the same, which is that it's well intentioned, and yet some of it feels more like it's about the optics, or it's about like wanting to kind of cover your ass and
check
like,
all the boxes.
Yeah,
or something.
Not get blamed for being part of the problem, and like maybe in the end that's good that that's happening, because if it means that we are having a wider variety of representation, I do believe that that's a good thing. But there is something about it that feels like, I don't know, like it should still be about the acting. And it's hard for me to say, because I'm in the advantaged position of being a white male. So I haven't ever personally experienced the kind of disadvantage of what it means to be not white or not male.
Right.
But it feels like if I were a person of color, I don't know that I would enjoy being cast just because I was a person of color. I would want to be cast because I'm a great actor.
Right, because you're the right person.
Right.
It's like you're the right actor for the role.
Right.
And I think that that everything is about the balance. So it's like, I think there's a tendency to go to that everyone's diverse and they go too far, where mm-hmm. it's instead of it having it be a, you know, sort of a balanced process and feeling.
Yeah. I guess that's just part of progress, though. And it's ultimately, I think we're heading in the right direction. And if there is some, like you said, like going too far, or like some of it coming from a place of not the most like sincerely inclusive place, but a more like almost like wanting to appear inclusive more than actually be inclusive, it's to be expected that there's going to be some of that. And that's just going to be the natural consequence of us making the progress that we're making.
And it's better than not.
It's definitely better than not, yeah.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I want to get down to sort of like what might be sort of the punchline of this, or like what we've maybe been dancing around, which is like I said, I think there's a lot of people out there who want a career in their creative field, again, whether it's acting or whatever else it is, and there's a gate to that. And we've talked about how some of those gates work and how some of those gates are opening. I guess I just want to ask you, for just explicitly, what would be your advice if you could speak to someone out there who's, especially someone out there who might not have the means to like move to Hollywood, like the person who asked this question from Peru, what would be your advice to if they don't have any of those contacts, but they still want to do this, what would you say?
Well, I think that one of the things is that there's local casting directors in almost every city in the world.
Really?
Including Peru.
Yeah.
And so that's a good place to start.
Uh-huh.
A good place to start is where you live.
Right.
And
she does live in Lima, which is the big city in Peru.
That's the big city. Yeah. And we just, you know, we've done searches recently, especially with the diversity that's happening.
Right.
It actually, we've done a lot of searches in Latin America and in Peru, and there are casting directors in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good place to start is where you live. I mean, if you live on a farm, you have to go to the city that's closest to you.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But I think if you live in a fairly metropolitan place, there's going to be some sort of, even if it's just commercials, even if it's just theater, there's going to be some sort of artistic center that I think you can start there.
Right.
Because I'm a big believer in – in if you work hard and you I believe in manifesting your dreams. I just think you can.
Yeah.
I think if you really, really try and you really want it,
yeah.
you have to work really, really, really hard, and you have to be tenacious and ambitious, and you can't take no for an answer. And if you think there's no way and it's impossible, then it will be impossible.
Yeah.
And if you think there's a way, there'll be a way.
Yeah. I feel that way too, but I think it's, I don't know, for the sake of discussion, I guess, because I like to play devil's advocate.
Yes.
Look, I would love to think, because I'm lucky to have achieved whatever success I've achieved. So I'd like to take credit and say, like, well, it's because I worked hard and I didn't take no for an answer. And I did work hard. I worked really, really hard. But I also know some people that have worked really hard, probably just as hard as I have, and haven't achieved the good fortune that I have. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to contend with that. It's something that I personally, if I'm being honest, I think I feel a lot of guilt about, because I feel like there's a part of my good fortune that I deserve, but there's also a part of my good fortune that I probably don't deserve any more than someone else who's not getting it. Like, there's something not fair about that. And you're on the front lines of that. Like, you see it every day. I'm curious how you wrestle with that kind of fairness or unfairness.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't think there's a lot of fairness happening. But I think when you said good fortune, you know, I think that's hard work, and I think there's fate, and I think I think there's a lot of that, you know, a lot of times when there's somebody that we're trying to get, a director really wants, and it can't happen, and then it's somebody else, and it always is the right person. There is some sort of bigger force happening, because I feel like it's like you have to try from my perspective as what I do, I have to try to get the right person in the part, and if it's who the director wants, I have to fight to get that person, but if I for some reason can't get that person, then I have to find the next person, right? So then that's where the fate comes in. And I think that, you know, I think from an actor's perspective, it is really hard. And if you really want to do it, you have to be prepared for it to be really, really hard. It's hard because there's so many factors that are influencing why you get a role and why you don't get a role.
Yeah.
That's why I said before, when you go into an audition, about leaving it in the room. Otherwise, it's too hard on your heart. And getting in those rooms is also tough. But you just have to do every avenue you can find and think of is what you should do.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, where this leads me to is, as grateful as I am to get to do acting and other creative things for a living and have that be how I make my money, I think a lot about other modes of creativity that aren't professional, that aren't about money. Because the unfairness comes from just that I think just about every human being on the planet has in their nature the capacity and potentially the desire, the urge to be creative, to express themselves creatively. There's 7 billion people on the planet. I would argue that maybe all 7 billion of them have that. And if not all 7 billion of them, a good chunk of those billions of people have that in them. But there's only so many jobs in the creative industry. And that means there's always going to be a whole lot of people who don't get to do their creative thing for money. But that doesn't mean that they don't get to do their creative thing.
Right.
Like, I feel like there's this thing in our culture where if you're not doing it for a living, well, then you must not really be doing it very well or very seriously, or it must not be that important to you, because if it were really important to you, then you'd get out there and you'd do what you had to do to, like, actually get a job doing it. But I don't think that that's true. Like, I personally know a lot of people who are brilliant and talented and worked hard at it, and it's just not been what worked out professionally. And I wish that there were less of a premium put on making creativity your living. I'm curious to talk to you about it, because, like I said, you're seeing it every day. You're having an audition where 20 some people come in throughout the day, and only one of them are going to get the part, or none of them.
Yeah.
Like, do you know any people who you sincerely thought, like, this is a great actor. And then for one reason or another, over the years, they audition a bunch and eventually it doesn't work out for them.
Yes, I do. And sadly, I think that that does happen a lot. I think part of it has to do with that the process can be brutal. And so many years of kind of auditioning, like, I think it's hard on someone's soul, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like going in those rooms time and time again and not getting the role or getting really close. And then maybe the movie's not doesn't do well. And mm-hmm. so that thing that you thought was going to be the thing, and that happens a lot where someone gets a big part and then their agent is like, we're not going to let them do anything else. And then that movie's not good. And that's like, that's sad and kind of a disaster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think for women, it's particularly hard because they age out and men don't. And that's really, you know, I see that a lot.
You want to just talk a bit more about that? Because I think that is really something worth shining a light on.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's better nowadays. You know, I think it's better now than it was. But I think that once a woman hits 40, there's just not as many roles unless you're Meryl Streep. You know, like, it's hard. It's very difficult.
Yeah. I'm 38. That's really fucking terrifying.
But for men, it's not the same. You know, you'll look at a career of a male movie star, and you look at their leading ladies as they get older, and their leading ladies get younger.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so true.
It's so true. You know,
and it's still that way.
It's still that way. It's very hard because it's based on other things. You know, it's not based for women. It's not just. It's based on more than just talent.
How can an actress cope with that? Like, have you had conversations with people who are?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I have good friends who go through that. You know, and you know, when one of their responses was to make a little movie for $10,000, which is very little amount of money,
right,
to shoot in 5 days, and it got sold and it's like a little tiny movie, but her creativity was fulfilled.
Yeah.
And she's great in the movie, you know, and it's sort of like, so I think it's finding your own avenues, right? And it's like, maybe, you know, and now that's saying, and she directed that movie and starred in it. And now she's trying to do, you know, so it's finding, it's like kind of going back to what you were saying about that creativity doesn't always have to be how you make your money.
Right.
Right. It can be, as long as you're fulfilling your creativity, it's not the ideal, right, for someone who's now aging out of being able to play parts, but at least they're finding other avenues. And I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah. And I think that's probably true, whether it's because you're up against the injustice of Hollywood movies having this convention where actresses are younger than actors, or you're up against the injustice of Hollywood movies mostly casting people who are able to afford to move to Hollywood. And there's a lot of injustice of, it's not a level playing field. There's not equal opportunities. And it's hard for me to talk about it because I was literally born in the suburbs of Los Angeles.
Right.
A male, a white male.
Yeah.
So, but I do feel that, believe it or not, I've been so fortunate to have whatever success I've had. And I still feel sometimes like dissatisfied and upset, which I know might sound kind of crazy, but I'm telling, like, I really feel it. I think there's something human about feeling that dissatisfaction, especially if you're kind of inclined to be an artist. That's like part of being an artist, is that feeling of dissatisfaction. And to me, I focus on what actually makes me the most satisfied and what actually gives me the most joy, which is doing the stuff itself, making the thing. It's the creative process, is why this show is called Creative Processing. When I'm in a movie and it comes out, that's not the fun part.
No, doing it.
The fun part is shooting the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I make music. I've never been a professional musician. I've never gotten involved in the music industry. And I don't know if that's because I wouldn't be able to because I'm not good enough or because I just didn't want to, or I don't know. But I don't know if that even matters. To me, what matters is I do it because it gives me a lot of joy to do it. And I certainly still wrestle with feelings of inadequacy of like, well, fuck, why don't I have a music career? Why didn't I put out an album? Why haven't I like played blah, blah, blah in like this huge venue and like done my set and had people know me? Like that feels bad that I haven't done those things. But when I like actually sit down and start playing the music, that shit starts feeling a lot
further away.
Yeah, further away. I was like, oh yeah, that's just, those are the trappings and those are like.
Oh yeah, because it's the dissatisfaction that makes you go, okay, I'm just going to sit down and play some music. And then you feel better and now you're, and then you're satisfied.
Yeah, that is how it goes for me.
Yeah, I think that probably is the case for a lot of people. You know, if you can still be creative, even if you're not making a living at it, I think that's gives you joy and satisfaction.
Yeah. Well, this is a really great conversation. Thank you for talking. Can I ask you one other question?
Of course.
I've been finishing these episodes with an off-topic question.
Okay.
Because we get all sorts of questions from the internet. Some of them can inspire a whole conversation and some of them are just off. But I think those are sometimes fun to answer. So you want to answer one of these?
Sure.
All right. This is a question from Jorge Ortega from Phoenix, Arizona. He asked, would you rather give up eating or sleeping for the rest of your life? You just made a face.
That's a hard question. I enjoy both of those things very much.
I know.
I think, oh, wow, that's hard. I think eating. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think eating. I love to sleep. I love to eat. I mean, I owned a restaurant for a long time, so I didn't know that. Yeah, I owned a restaurant called Primitivo in Abbot-Kinney for 13 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The restaurant business is like as hard as fucking show business,
brutal.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's very brutal, but it's very fun.
Yeah.
It's the same, you know. Right. I had to try it, and it was good. It was really great. Uh-huh. So I don't know what I think I would rather give up eating than sleeping, though, because right now sleeping is the – it's the thing that fuels me more than eating.
Yeah. Okay.
How about you?
I mean, I already gave up sleeping. I'm a dad.
Yes. Right. So you've already given up sleeping.
Yeah, I've already given that up. I'll keep the eating.
Keep the eating. So good. We're good balance
okay,
there.
Okay, yeah, good. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you for listening. Thanks so much to this episode's guest, Mary Verneau. Thank you to the folks who asked this week's questions. Monica Patricio, if you want to find her on the internet, she's at MONIKALE, and I think 2 underscores. It's a little hard to read, but that's her handle. And Jorge Ortega, you can find him at this is a good one, at Dolce Brie. Sweet Brie, it's a good cheese. DolceBrie. Thanks to you guys for asking good questions. If you want to ask a question, you can email creativeprocessing@hitrecord.org, or you can use Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram and hashtag creativeprocessing. If you want to do more than ask a question, if you want to get creative, if you found this conversation so inspiring that you want to write or draw or answer the question yourself, you can come to Hit Record. We have a creative processing remix project going on. I've really enjoyed seeing people answering this question themselves because, you know, every episode's based on a question. And we've been putting out the on-camera prompt to, you know, what do you think? How would you answer this question? It's really interesting to see how different people have their own perspective. So you could do that. Or if you don't feel like talking, you feel like, making some music or writing a song, whatever, we've got various creative prompts inspired by some of the ideas that we talked about in this conversation. You can go to hitrecord.org/creativeprocessing. Check it out. The producers of the Creative Processing podcast are Lexi Tankersley and Raymond Way, audio produced by Keir Schmidt. Thanks to Cadence13 and everybody at the Hit Record office. And again, most of all, thanks to you for listening to me talking for a long time. Okay, thanks. Bye.